This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Late yesterday afternoon, we get a decision on ownership of the Minnesota Timberwolves. This has been debated for an extensive period of time. You had Glenn Taylor for decades looking to bring someone in who could start as a minority owner and potentially eventually take over as the majority owner. And after looking at numerous people, it appeared Glenn had settled on the combination of Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry. And you had some delays. You had some extensions. Some was tied to delays and questions about whether Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry had money. And when Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry felt like they had a window for NBA approval, Glenn Taylor announced out of nowhere, seemingly, that no. That Alex and Mark had missed their chance, they had not fulfilled their contract, and that he was no longer looking to give them or be a part of the process where they could potentially purchase majority ownership, and he was done. He came on here the next day. He was a part of an interview with John Krasinski, who's about to join us, and made news, and Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry made news, and it was very contentious. And finally, a three-member arbitration panel was put together in the fall, and it took longer than we all thought. It took months and months, but yesterday, with dueling releases, the decision comes out in a 2-1 decision in favor of Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez. John Krasinski, closer to the Wolves than anybody in town. My friend from The Athletic is here. He's on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Johnny, right now we just have statements from those involved. It appears they've been instructed to say only statements because after Glenn's decision, Glenn made news with you, made news here, then Alex and Mark responded, and it got pretty nasty, to say the least. If you could ask each party one question, what would you ask them?
Oh, boy, that's a great way to start it. I guess my initial thoughts are, one, Glenn Taylor, do you plan to try to challenge this ruling in any way? We can get into the kind of difficulty of doing that, but Glenn has not said whether he will go quietly into the night yet on this. And then for Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez, I think it's got to be, hey, you've been sort of chasing this car for a couple of years now, and now you've caught it. Now what do you do? And I think that the idea of talking about and theorizing and planning for being an owner is one thing, and then actually having to put it into practice is going to be an entirely different one. And so I'm sure they're preparing and getting ready for that, but just to get the mindsets of the two of them right now beyond the statements would be, I think, pretty valuable.
So let's go to Glenn first, because excellent responses from you. From what you know, before we get to the Board of Governors' approval, the owners and making a decision if they believe Alex and Mark can be good stewards of this franchise, and that would pretty much seal it. Before we get to that, legally, what is available for Glenn Taylor to try to pursue yesterday's ruling?
Yeah, so technically he cannot appeal this arbitration ruling to this panel or another panel. That is not available to him. What he could do is go to federal court and try to get a judge to vacate this ruling. From what I'm told from the legal experts that know about these processes, certainly a lot better than I do, the threshold for meeting a challenge and for having a judge to overturn an arbitrator's panel, especially a three-person panel decision like this, is very, very high. He'd have to prove that one of or more of the judges were compromised or biased in some sort of way, or he would have to show that the panel exceeded its authority in ruling the way that it did. And so I was told, Chad, leading up to this, that it seemed like both sides were content with the way the process played out and the integrity of the judging panel. And so it seemed like there would be, you know, cause for belief that neither side would appeal and challenge or would go to the federal court, but you never know. Like he has read the entire decision and the reasons for each judge's decision to side with Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lurie. Two of them did, one of them signed with Glenn. And so we'll have to see if what he saw in that response was enough for him to say, wait, something's wrong here, I have to go further, or if he'll say, you know what, we're just going to go forward here and let the NBA's Board of Governors decide if these guys are right for the job or not.
Will we see the documents from all three individuals involved in the decision? Will we see that, where they explain why they ruled the way they did?
I don't think so, Chad. I mean, certainly I'm making my best efforts to see if I could somehow procure those or acquire those. But it's at least from what I understand, the NBA especially wants this to be as private as possible. They do not want any more mudslinging. They do not want any more public scrutiny on what already has been an incredibly messy and, frankly, you know, a little bit embarrassing situation for everyone to go through. And so I think it's going to be a case where the statements stand for themselves. The league has instructed both sides not to say anything more on it. And then that will be the end of it. As far as I know, we will see if those documents can come out, but I think they're going to be kept pretty close to the vest.
John Krasinski from The Athletic is with us talking about yesterday's decision with the arbitration panel ruling in favor of Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez. And just to remind people on this, John, Lurie and Rodriguez were allowed to pick one. Taylor was allowed to pick one. Mm-hmm. And then there was a neutral party. And that neutral party decided it. The Kathleen Blatz, Glenn Taylor selected. The individual that Alex and Mark selected, Tom Frazier, aligned with them. It was Joseph Slights. I'm assuming the chances of Joseph Slights, Kathleen Blatz, and Tom Frazier speaking today, or even going forward, pretty minimal, and that might be even exaggerating the likelihood they speak up.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is all meant to be behind closed doors, cloak and dagger, kind of handle things that way. One important detail to include there is Thomas Frazier is a Minnesota judge. With a Minnesota mm-hmm. background. So this is not a case of the East Coast person goes for the East Coast guys, yes, and the Minnesota goes for the Minnesota guy. And so it's 2-1 there, right in their favor. And Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lurie, they won this thing, I think, fair and square here.
Hang on, sir. Let's take a short break, come back. We'll talk more about Glenn, his legacy, if this is it, and then go back to what John had to say about Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lurie. that if they do take over, what happens next? What stamp do they want to put on this organization? Because they've already put a fair amount on this team. But when you're the final say, it's different. John Krasinski from The Athletic back with us after a short pause on CCO.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We continue the dialogue with John Krasinski. His excellent work available to you on Twitter, and most importantly, The Athletic, well worth your time. Let's go to Alex and Mark. First of all, do you have any idea a timeline when the Board of Governors could potentially give this the final approval or shake things up again and say no, that Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lori did not reach the threshold we believe is required to be owners of an NBA team?
Yeah, I think that from what I understand, I don't have a defined and definitive timeline for it. I do think it's going to take multiple weeks for this to play out. What I was told earlier today is that there does seem to be an appetite with the league to kind of expedite this process as much as they can and get this thing moving quickly. And so I do think it's not going to be something that stretches several months or anything like that, but it's also not going to be something that happens next week. It's going to take some time for the league to go through the final vetting process of Mark Lori, of Alex Rodriguez, and of their entire sort of ownership group with their well-heeled minority partners as well. They'll have to look at that. Then they will have a vote up or down on what will happen here. And I will say that one kind of interesting little side note to this process that is coming up is it does seem, Chad, like the vote happening this time right now in this, you know, this time of year rather than last year actually might work out well for Lori and Rodriguez, because there has been some financial gains with Mark Lori, with his net worth. He just had a big spread in Forbes on Monday about what Wonder is doing and everything. And so, and they've got, you know, $950 million in this escrow account. It seems like they have their ducks in a row that way, in a way that maybe they didn't at this time last year. And so this may actually end up working in their favor that it was drawn out as much as it was.
For me, I think that's indisputably correct. I know they have been sensitive to this idea that individuals have raised, myself, you've raised it, with just questions when people who are in the know would tell us, I'm not sure they have the money you need to own an NBA team. And I'm talking about now $3, $4, $5 billion. It's absurd money. They have pushed back always, but they have now Michael Bloomberg and they have Eric Schmidt. Okay, so this is the point, and we've talked about this a bunch off air, but it's worth discussing again. When they have that money and both those individuals have such a small ownership of this group, of the Rodriguez-Lori group, for that to be a factor, John, Are they going to have to show the league that they may increase their percentage of the team? Would they have to show them with some significant, if not complete, private investment in a new arena that they're going to contribute? No doubt Bloomberg is extraordinarily wealthy, and so is Schmidt. But if they only have a small percentage, could we be potentially overinflating how important that is?
Yeah, I think that in terms of us, like, looking at their group, and you say, wow, they have Michael Bloomberg, they have Eric Schmidt, they have all the money in the world. I mean, certainly they have that financial backing. But what I can tell you, Chad, is that the league is really essentially evaluating Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez, their net worth, what they are doing. It's Mark. They are the ones leading this operation. They're not going to go into a situation and say, hey, we're going to approve you because if all hell breaks loose and you lose all your money and you can't keep the lights on, Mayor Bloomberg is going to step in and be fine.
Yes.
That is not Nails part of the calculus of this decision.
Yeah, unless they all of a sudden they're at 35%. You know,
right.
Unless they're a significant number. So let's say everything does get approved. What is their game plan from day one? Because I assume they're going to want to say, we're going to show you how unique and potentially different we are from Glenn. I think we're all going to think of an arena. We're all going to think of any changes they want to make. Is it your sense they already have those laid out and ready to announce, or did they want to wait until this announcement and the Board of Governors before they finalize that?
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly going to wait for the Board of Governors to get approval before they roll out any grand or even any small plans. Technically, right now, Chad, Glenn Taylor is still the owner. He is still running the show for these next weeks, you know, and if Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez get approved by the league, then they take over. So today, nothing is different today than it was yesterday before the ruling came down. There is still this limbo period that we are in. So I would anticipate that any big announcements, any big plans will come after their approval. But from what I understand, assuming that all goes well, it's going to come very quickly after. I think you're going to hear plans for an arena. You're going to hear discussions about what they do for their broadcast games in terms of moving away potentially from FanDuel to something else. You're going to see a lot of big ideas raised and kind of thrown out there right away because they've been waiting for several years now to do this, and they want to show that they are ready for this moment and that they're coming in aggressively and going to roll out some big things.
Are they at a point now in spending enough time up here, talking to enough politicians, where they realize that the appetite for any sort of government money is about zero, and that this venture of a new arena, which could be $700, $800, $900 million, they're either going to have to finance that completely by themselves or at a very high number, a much higher number than any of the other teams here in town the last 10-15 years?
Yeah, so this is where it really gets interesting, Chad, because, you know, we talked at the start of the show about, hey, you've discussed all of these plans, but you're speaking in theory, essentially, and now it's time to put them into practice. Alex Rodriguez is on the record publicly saying that they plan to do a privately financed arena. Now, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean they're paying for all of it? I don't know. Does that mean they're paying for 90% of it, 60% of it? I'm not exactly sure, and that's what we will start to see real details come out as they unveil these plans, because They've said all of the right things, both privately and publicly, throughout this process. But it is a different thing to say them than to actually do them. And especially in this political climate in Minneapolis and in the Twin Cities, like I don't know if they're counting on a big public portion of the arena, because if they are, I do think they will be severely disappointed. But yeah, they have said private financing, and I do think that part of it is probably where they can leverage Michael Bloomberg and Eric Schmidt and stuff like this for development outside of the actual basketball expenses. So we'll see about that. But if they're counting on the county, on the city, on the state writing a big check, I think they will be swinging and missing at that point.
Let's finish talking about Glenn. If this is it, you've been covering it for a long time. I've been around it for a long, long time, too. What do you think is the biggest misnomer about Glenn? Maybe the criticism that you understand why people say it, but it doesn't match up. And what is the fairest criticism about Glenn's ownership in your view?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the fairest criticism of Glenn Taylor's ownership run is that for many years, he hired the wrong people to run things. And that includes coaches and GMs. That also includes, you know, CEOs and business people on that side of the equation. Glenn Taylor was not a meddling owner. If that's a misperception. He mm-hmm. hired people.
Correct.
and he let them do their jobs. Unfortunately, he had Rob Moore hiring David Kahn, hiring Kurt Rambis, like, you know, all of those kinds of decisions that were really devastating to the basketball side of the equation. Anyone in his position would have hired Tom Thibodeau when he was hired, and that did not
work. He was the top candidate by far that offseason.
1,000%. 1,000%. You know, so they had some bad luck involved, or they had some things that didn't work out that were more conventional. But once he hired Ethan Kasson as CEO on the business side, once he started to bring in Chris Finch, even Gerson Rosas made some good moves before he flamed out. Mm-hmm. And then Tim Connolly, which Alex Rodriguez and Mark Laurie were huge in bringing Tim Connolly. Glenn Taylor had to approve it and write the final checks. Once he got the right people in place with the Timberwolves, they started to look like a very good and competent organization. Same with the Minnesota Lynx. He got Cheryl Reeve in there. He got the right athletes in there, and they won championships. So he was never one of those guys that was meddling and making decisions unilaterally that were blowing things up. It was just ultimately he hired some of the wrong people in the early 2000s to mid 2000s that really put them on a tough slide for a long time.
Yeah, I would just add a little more context to things you said. You know, he wanted this to be run partially family-wise, and that was a mistake because Rob Moore and Roger Griffith just weren't up for the jobs. Mm-hmm. And to compare Ethan and the team that Ethan has put together to then is laughable. You know, he deferred to Rob on David Kahn. Mm-hmm. That was an enormous mistake. You know, the biggest one that comes up is the Joe Smith situation. Mm-hmm. And it's just a reminder about the Joe Smith situation. You know, that was going on in the league. Numerous other teams were doing that. The, mm-hmm. hey, it's 1 year, but it's really 4 years. And that mm-hmm. offseason, I was very, very close to flipping Kevin and had a good relationship with Glenn. Obviously didn't know what those guys knew. I'm not saying that, but among the people on the periphery, I wasn't far away. Mikhail couldn't stand agents. Mikhail was so sick of agents, whereas Flip, as you know, loved it. If he could talk to anybody on the phone for about 70 hours a day, he would, including agents. So Flip was the one who said, why don't we do what everybody else is doing? And Mikhail was like, hands off, you do whatever. And Glenn in the end said, if this is what's going on, I'll do it. So I miss Flip Saunders immensely. So do you. I'm not here to bury him. I'm just saying, because I never would do that. I'm just saying from knowing that, Flip was the person who said, why don't we do what everybody else in the league is doing? It wasn't everybody else, but it was a number of teams. And ironically enough, even though Flip was one of saying, let's do this, and Mikhail didn't want to be a part of agents, and Glenn's like, whatever, it was Glenn and Kevin who got punished more because they weren't going to take all three out. Now, he's the owner. He has to have final say on that. But that is an example of him saying, well, I trust you guys when at a time his health was compromised. It probably was best for him to say no, but the Wolves are about the seventh or eighth team to do it. They just did it so lousy, and then you had the agent battle between Fleischer and why am I forgetting the other guy, Andy Miller,
where
they got into such a battle that's how it became public. If those two agents don't get in this big battle, what the Wolves did is the same thing the other teams did, and they wouldn't have got caught.
Yeah, and all very good points. The other thing to get to probably quickly is, fans are really mad at Glenn Taylor for the Kevin Garnett relationship.
Yes.
You and I both know that is a very thorny subject. And to paint Glenn as the lone bad guy who is all to blame for how that relationship has gone
ridiculous.
And for what was asked of Kevin and all those things is inaccurate to say the least. So, Glenn has made definitely mistakes in his run here.
100%.
Ultimately he has to answer for them because he's at the top of the food chain, but there are details like the Joe Smith, like the Kevin Garnett thing that make it a lot more complicated than the conventional wisdom is. Ultimately, there is no NBA in this town today if not for Glenn Taylor. If he did not 100%. Save this team from moving to New Orleans, they would not have been the NBA never would have come back. And so, for that part of it, especially, he will always have certainly some appreciation in my mind because he saved pro basketball in this town, and the Timberwolves or the NBA would not be here today without him.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you, my friend. I know you're swamped, so I appreciate the time. We'll talk soon.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
Just the last thing that Johnny was saying on KG. Listen, the organization would be much better if KG was back. KG, and Ant's closing, but right now, it still isn't close, boys and girls. KG is the best player in franchise history. Glenn, when he said one of the years, the McHale, I think his post-flip, this is with Case, when Mac asked KG to sit out some games to avoid losing the pick in the horrible Cassell Yarich trade, Garnett reluctantly agreed. And then Glenn made a comment about Kevin's play, which was wrong, because Garnett would have played at 3 in the morning anywhere on the planet. But when Flip orchestrated bringing him back and Flip said, we're gonna get Kevin as a part of ownership, Glenn, because of the Joe Smith situation, was so sensitive. Glenn Taylor never, ever told Kevin Garnett he was going to be an owner of the team. He was extraordinarily fearful. Now, did Flip think he could pull it off? Yes. Did KG believe that? Yes. But when Flip horribly, tragically died, that ended. But that wasn't Glenn going back on his word. That was Flip still trying to close a deal where, sadly, he never had a chance to do that. All right. Let's switch to Jamie. Jamie Uchus is with us in moments after traffic, then lousy weather forecast on CCO. Uchus is here. She's on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Are you in my state?
I am.
I had to see someone else's Instagram post to know that you were visiting.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm visiting. I'm here for an extended period of time. I'm one of you. I mean, I'm stalking you, actually. I'm about an hour and a half away. I drive up to your place. I use binoculars. I look in. I see Doug. I see your son. I see the dog. Then I drive back each night.
Super creepy. This is not funny. Yeah. This is creepy. You might want to let's turn this around.
Telescope, I've got all sorts of stuff. Okay, I'm going to start with two travel stories since you are our travel expert. CBS has Peter Greenberg. Who needs Peter Greenberg? We've got Jamie Uchus. So I had to fly back, and I was lucky enough to fly back because we had a big charity event a week ago today for Second Harvest Heartland organization. Nice. I know you believe in a lot. Raised well over $400,000. So bravo to the audience for stepping forward. So as I'm flying back,
do you remember when you made me eat a ghost pepper on television to raise money for Second Harvest Heartland?
Okay. I think you volunteered and said, I have the ability to eat anything spicy. And then we said, okay, because there was the world's spiciest pepper store out there, right? Wasn't it something like that?
Yeah, something like
and
that.
And then
America.
We do have the footage somewhere where you're initially okay, then you're not good, and at some point you're like, please, I want this to end now. But you were a trooper, as you always are.
It was pretty bad.
Thank you. It was great. So, okay, so I'm flying back, and I've got the window seat. Are you window or aisle?
Window, if I'm tired, I want to sleep. Aisle, if it's a very long flight, I'm going to want to get up to go to the bathroom.
Sure. So I get up. Very nice woman's in the middle seat. She was already offering me to try to get me something to drink because I'd briefly dozed off when the drink cart had come by, and she's like, I'll get you one. I'm like, no, I'm okay. Then she offers me a Clementine. Okay, if a random stranger on the plane offers you a Clementine, I was in because I love Clementines, and I'm not that paranoid. Had that. So then she gets up and goes, well, do you want to go to the bathroom too since we're both getting up? Sure. So when I come back, I sit down in my seat. My seat is not reclined. I don't jump in the seat. I don't plop a la Curb fans. I sit in the seat, and the woman behind me goes, oh, great, right in my knees.
Oh.
Okay. You know me very well. I started to turn. I was ready to turn. And then I just caught myself, and I thought, what's the point?
Yes, what's the point?
Then I sat there, then I thought about it for about
Count to five.
Yes. Well, I counted to 45 minutes because I kept thinking about it over and over and over again. And then when we got off the plane, I let her walk by me, and then I muttered to myself about her. Okay? But probably better than I'm on a cell phone issue where I'm, screaming at somebody, and it's been a good run. Okay. Now, Kathleen.
So what's your question?
No, I'm gonna get to it here. Kathleen and Quentin, they fly back yesterday, okay? And there are two people sitting in front of her. And one, to be honest, according to Kathleen, is a larger individual, larger female. And so another guy comes up and says, I have the window. And she goes, okay, slides over, does not put the armrest down, separating her and the guy in the window, but does put the arm down between her and her guy or her traveling companion. So now she's leaning more into the guy, okay?
Okay.
And has to put it in. And then when she sat down, she leaned back and hit Kathleen's knees. And guess what Kathleen said? Oh, you hit my knees. So there's some symmetry somehow in this trip. Okay.
But so what's the question? I'm so confused.
Okay. It's a very convoluted, complicated story. And remember, we're just trying to get to 12 segments here.
Okay.
If you're the guy and you're in the window and you're squished in the window and you don't get the armchair, the armrest separating you, but the husband does, how are you feeling about that?
Look, I just feel like airline travel has gotten just so awful that, like, this is to be expected. Like, I expect my knees to get bumped. I expect the kid behind me to kick me the entire flight. I expect people to be crying. That's the cost of travel these days. Unless you're in first class, like, that's how everybody's rolling.
So you're in this seat. and you can't put your armrest down, but you see the guy is, you're just going to say, you, Jamie Ukas, not a shrinking violet, more than willing to step forward. You're just going to be squished while she's leaning further into you and the guy has more room?
I've had this happen to me before. Like, what are you going to say? Like, put your armrest down?
Yes.
Like, what are you hoping for? You're hoping to say, put your armrest down, stop leaning on me?
And maybe get just a little more space. But then I have empathy because this person is bigger. And it's not like she just decided intentionally just to get bigger today to make the flight terrible for you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it's just like the cost. Like, I've had people fall asleep on me. I've had people where I've woken up and their shoes are off and they're like their feet are on my side of the, you know, the bottom area. I've had people who, like, they have their baggage and they're supposed to be able to fit it under the seat, and it's like all over their lap and under the seat, and the whole time they're standing up rifling. I mean, I just think we live in a society where, like, no one is self-aware. No one cares about anybody else. It's like every man for himself, and I think there's no other place to see that part of humanity than an airplane.
Dave Harrigan, you're in the same scenario. This guy's wedged up against the window, but the husband, the guy, the boyfriend, the travel companion, he's got the armrest. You don't have the armrest, Dave Harrigan. What are you doing?
You know me, Chad. I am a shrinking violet. I'm sitting there, and I'm doing nothing, and I will complain about it later.
See?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Well, see, your phone broke up there just a second. That's what, and I told this story to Dave, that's what still bugs me about not saying something, Jamie, to the woman last week. I feel like the...
Yeah, but who cares? Like, so she's a...
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Therapist. That person be themselves. You can't... You know, control outcome of the situation. You can control what you did, which is what you did, and I'm proud of you.
Can I tell you one other part of the story that I followed her home and put a knife in her four tires.
Stop it. Stop it.
All right. Stop following people home
with binoculars.
Yeah, I know.
Knives or whatever. Like,
that's,
like, you're going to get
that seems to be the theme.
That is not accurate.
Yeah. All right.
Weirdo.
Your phone is breaking up, so I'm going to let you go.
Sorry.
But I'm going to text you next day or two, and let's figure out a way if we can hook up. I'm here for a while.
Okay, let me know. I'm down the road.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay.
Jamie and her breaking up phone. How would you feel if you're in that squish seat and the other person has the armrest? You're fine with it? You're rolling with it? You're doing the Minnesota thing, muttering to yourself? Are you going to speak up? What is your move? Are you going to be Harrigan, or are you going to step forward? By the way, if somebody takes their shoes and socks off, Dave, and their naked feet are leaning over against you, no chance in you know what. Are you going to speak up then, Dave?
Probably not, but you calling it the Harrigan, like I said, that's what I think I would do. It is what you did just a week ago.
I did.
You coward. Talk a big game. No, you don't back it up.
No. I did not. I was not squished in the seat.
Coward.
Though. I just had somebody say, oh, yeah. Right in my knees.
Now, a real man would have spoken up and said, pipe down, lady.
Missy. Why are you flying? Why aren't you cooking at home right now? 651. 461-9226. I just responded to one of our texters. You can text at any point. 651-461-9226. I also had responded to another texter who thought they were reaching out to WCCO TV. I mean, I get why people think we're owned by the same companies. But we're not. We may have people on occasionally from WCCO TV. My friendship with Jason and Jamie is partially tied to some of the work we did with WCCO TV. But we have plenty of people on from the other stations in town. Over the next 10 years, Dave Harrigan, will WCCO TV or radio change their call letters?
No.
Because I would love if we would separate. We were first, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't see any signs where WCCO TV is going to change.
No, they're good call letters. We'll keep them, and I'm sure they feel the same way.
You got some catchy call letters for us right now?
You just wish it was WCHD, the Chad.
No, I do not. If you were in this flight dilemma, what would you do? I would be accidentally elbowing the woman the entire flight. Another one. I accidentally tip my hot coffee in their lap and watch how quickly the armrest becomes free. That's a bit rough with the hot coffee.
Yeah, I don't think we need second-degree burns just because they didn't put the armrest down. That seems tough.
Okay, where do we stand? And I don't think I've talked about this in years, but we did a few times before. Where do you stand on individuals, airlines, and if they can or can't fit in the seat? Again, I'm not here to shame. I'm not here to be rude. But if I'm the heavier person,
mm-hmm.
and I'm spilling over into your seat, don't you feel like you're now? I guess if it's Donald Trump, it's $2 a flight. That's what I heard last week. I don't think we're quite paying that. But if you're paying your $250, your $500, whatever you're paying, your miles, your points, shouldn't you feel like you should be able to have your seat?
I would like to have my own seat, my own full seat. Yes.
Should airlines step in and say, if it's borderline, we need to see if you can fit in this seat, and if not, you have to pay for a second seat?
So at the gate, you have the little thing where you put the carry-on to make sure it fits in the box?
Yeah,
and if they think you're a bigger person, you have to sit in a little box and see if you can squeeze in there?
Sounds disgusting.
It does.
But if you're the person... And you're going to be young. I mean, what if this is now a flight to Australia?
Yeah, it's awful, but I do think you have to step in.
I think you do too. In fact, let's even stay with that just a little bit longer. Then I want to get to a couple different topics next hour. Do we think airlines need you? Install requirements for you to stay in your seat, and how do they do it? And if they can't make it, do they have to pay more? What do you want to say? We'll get to that and others, but first, CBS and Ari next.